Welcome to the Internet Report. I'm Angelique Medina, and as usual, I'm joined by Archana Kesavan. And we also have a special guest today, David Belson. David Belson is the Senior Director of Internet Research and Analysis at the Internet Society, where he focuses on efforts around internet measurement, internet shutdowns, and understanding market trends and how they impact the growth of the internet around the globe. He has 25 plus years of experience in the internet infrastructure space. He spent a lot of time at Akamai, where he launched the State of the Internet Report series. And he also publishes a blog called the Internet Disruption Report, where he provides aggregated coverage of internet disruptions taking place in countries around the world, including the causes of these disruptions. So we're really excited to have him join us today. So as usual, we're going to start by talking about some of the overall trends that we're seeing in terms of network availability across ISPs and cloud providers and UCaaS providers. And then we'll talk about some of the interesting events that have occurred over the last week, including some disruptions to some unemployment sites that we've seen occurring over the last few weeks. And then we'll touch on some of the interesting outage events that David has seen in his own work and that he's compiling. So with that, we're going to start by looking at some of these trends. And here, we'll just recap a little bit of what we saw the last few weeks. So overall, good news. We saw towards the end of March, so around March 16th, it started this slight increase. And then over the last week of March into April, held pretty steady. But then last week, we saw a pretty significant decline in the number of outages. So this is actually interesting because it's kind of in line with what we talked about last week, Archana, where we were speculating that the increase that we were seeing in outages didn't appear to be related to congestion because they were longer than what we would typically see under congestion events. And they were simultaneously, in many instances, happening over more locations. So they were more widespread. And that seemed to indicate that they were related to maybe state changes that were being made. So either peering changes or configuration changes that were then leading to these incidents. So this is good news then, right?
Yeah, totally. And also, you know, if it was looks like it was indeed those optimizations that were being done internally within the provider networks, what the peak of traffic that, you know, that's been going up has probably stabilized too. At this point, everybody who's working from home is working from home, right? So the watermark has completely changed, like we were talking about earlier, Angelique, and that's one of the reasons. So you've seen the highest level of traffic, you've made all the changes that you need to from, you know, provider perspective to accommodate for that. So that probably explains the drop off that we are seeing here.
I think, David, you had said that you were tracking some outage or traffic statistics from the IXPs, and you had seen also this sort of increase in traffic levels and then sort of a leveling, if you will.
Right. Yeah. So looking at IXP graphs across a number of continents and some of the graphs that the big CDN providers have published recently. And yeah, it's very much that sort of model where there's the peak that comes right around the time that people are asked to stay at home, the isolation events, and then generally tails off a little bit after that and has hit this new sort of steady state that the provider is obviously able to handle. But it's a little bit higher than it was in general, you know, in February, let's say, you know, about a month before.
So this seems to support kind of the notion that there was a few growing pains in getting to that point of supporting these increased traffic levels. But now it looks like there's, you know, we're getting to a point where, you know, that's the new normal, as you put it. And, you know, it seems like the providers are generally keeping up with the level of traffic. So that's good to see.
Right. And I think the application providers have been doing a lot of work scaling out in many cases, you know, accelerating their year-long scaling plans into a week or two.
Right.
I know that a lot of the IXPs have gone to their participants with offers that basically say like, hey, you know, whatever you need, it's, you know, low cost, it's no cost. Basically, you know, peer with whoever you can at whatever rates you can. Mm-hmm. So there's been a lot of work done there to help, I think, either minimize or eliminate those bottlenecks.
Yeah, that's a good point, because this was something we touched on very briefly last week, which is the level of collaboration that's been occurring across providers has been really great to see. I mean, there really has been a pulling together of everybody's kind of like, we're gonna do this, we're gonna get through it. So that's been really interesting.
Absolutely.
What I've also heard is between just application providers and ISPs, there's a lot of cost-sharing models that are in play as well as they're enhancing their bandwidth. So definitely everybody is coming together to make sure there's enough capacity in there.
Yeah, so we see the same drop in outages in the US as well. That's in line with what we see globally. So that's good. And then in terms of the ISPs, again, same downward trend that we see, dropped pretty substantially from March levels. So really, you know, very similar to what we saw in late February. So this is starting to look like what we see normally, you know. And again, there are outages that happen across the internet on a normal basis, right? You're never going to get to this, you know, zero level. That's not what normal looks like. Normal is, you know, there are things that happen, whether it's routing related or infrastructure related or security related, like you might see with a DDoS attack. This stuff is pretty normal. So this is looking good overall. And then in the U.S., of course, again, pretty substantial decline in the number of outages. Cloud providers, we haven't really seen a lot of impact on them over even the March period, where we're seeing kind of a steady rise in overall outages across various providers. Cloud providers have seemed fairly immune to some of the recent issues. And one of the reasons we talked about is, you know, the fact that they run massive global networks. In many cases, they have fairly extensive edges. In particular, Microsoft and Google, they tend to have users enter their network very quickly. And so they have a lot of capacity to absorb traffic surges. That's what they built their network for. So they've fared very well during this period, and you know, this continues to see, we continue to see that, you know, these are pretty normal levels overall, very low. And then the collaboration app providers, in terms of their network, so not the application itself, but in terms of their network and issues that we're seeing there, we historically really have barely seen or hardly ever see outage events in the UCaaS provider networks, but that wasn't the case in March. There was this sort of, there was periods throughout March where there was a spike in outages, which is really unusual. And we had kind of speculated a few weeks back that, you know, this was probably something where they were adjusting to just there's no way that you can plan for the surge that they've experienced. I mean, it's kind of incredible. I mean, millions and millions of call minutes.
200 million users all at once.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty incredible. I think Zoom went from, like, you know, 20, I don't know the exact number, but it was like 22.
Yeah, tens of million to like hundreds of millions.
To like hundreds of millions, you know, so just an incredible traffic growth, like in a space of a couple of weeks. And, you know, so not unsurprising that, you know, we'd see some issues crop up. But again, that seems to have gone down. So hopefully we're reaching that stability point.
You've responded pretty well, right? From 2019. Yeah. I mean, that's a big downward sweep. So hopefully that stays or goes down.
Yep. So, you know, again, you know, steady decline. Most of them, or all of them, it looks like, were in the US last week. But, you know, it's going in a good direction.
I wonder if that's a function of most of those providers being based in the U.S.
That's probably
global infrastructure, but mm-hmm. you know,
Yeah, they have more. I would think they would have more points of presence in the U.S. And so you're potentially going to be, depending on where you're located, routed to a POP that's in the United States. Right.
Also, I'm just wondering if this might be related to last week being like a shorter week because of the Easter holidays.
Oh, yeah.
When we see your week over week next Monday, we'll be able to validate if that hypothesis is accurate or not. But definitely a lot of folks have been off Thursday, Friday.
Interesting.
And I know in many places today is a holiday as well.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, I didn't realize it was in the U.S. I did know that. I know that in Europe and Australia, it's they had those days off. So
yeah,
that'll be interesting to see next week or this week, next week. So that's effectively just a highlight of what happened last week and some trends that we saw. Another really interesting thing that we looked at. And also kind of went back a few weeks looking at was some issues that were cropping up with users trying to connect to the New York Labor Department's unemployment site. Mm-hmm. And that was particularly interesting because it turned out that this did appear to be related to congestion within their network.
So what we're seeing here, and this is, again, traffic patterns and the impact of traffic that we've been seeing all the way up from March to it's ongoing to last week. So what you see here specifically for the New York labor site is that the availability had these trends, and these trends really mapped to time of day. So starting Monday to Friday, you see some interruption with respect to just accessing the website itself, where this is actually the website where you file for unemployment. And over the weekend, there's stability. And then again, March 29th, you start seeing these time of day dips again. So definitely there's a trend that we're seeing. Last week, however, this came down a little bit compared to the previous 2 weeks, just from an availability perspective. But still, there's definitely some kind of disruption going on, mapping again to time of day. So during the week, people are filing, more people are accessing the website to file these claims, and then that's kind of resulting in this. But I think what was very interesting for us to look at is this really mapped to an overall end-to-end packet loss, and which coincided with that time of day pattern that we were seeing from Monday to Friday with respect to accessing the site. But if we came down to notice where this congestion was or where this packet loss was, it was not necessarily on the internet per se. It was actually within the hosting location of where New York's unemployment website hosted itself. So it's within their own data centers that they are hosting this application. We started seeing this increasing packet loss, and that went through, this was the week of last week to like about April 1st. And then again over here, when we come down to April 6th, we start seeing very similar patterns as well. But this was all indications that the congestion was within the data center or within where the application was hosted itself. And if we looked at some of the news articles that was going around because of this disruption last week, there was mention about increasing capacity within the network. And this probably is capacity from an application perspective on the server, as well as capacity within the internal network as well to the routers or the switches that are involved in there. Yeah.
What's interesting, there's a couple of things. I mean, from a pattern standpoint, it really does map to the advice that's been given to have certain folks with last names have been given a designated day of the week to apply. And those days are Monday through Wednesday. And then Thursday, Friday, and Saturday are sort of wild card days, but we're really seeing like Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then a little bit on Friday is where you see those heavy peaks, and not so much on a Saturday, which, you know, is maybe, you know, it's not, maybe people are trying to follow the advice of just filing on those specific days, but there's less traffic, it appears, or congestion on Saturday.
On the weekend.
And over the weekend, yeah. Yeah. They didn't specify Sunday. I'm not sure why, but I assume you can also apply on a Sunday. The other thing that's interesting is that they're really just hosted out of a single data center, and they're not using any public cloud services or a CDN to front end their site, which could make it harder to very quickly absorb the level of traffic that they would have seen over the last few weeks.
I think the more, for me, the moving to a public cloud, that's not surprising because these are government and federal agencies. So they're like kind of maybe a little slower in terms of the actual quote unquote cloud migration. But the front ending without a CDN, that's definitely surprising. And we noticed this pattern across a couple of other unemployment sites as well.
California and some, yep.
Yeah. So yeah,
I guess.
Surprising.
Sorry. So my guess there also is that, I guess it's twofold. One is, you know, that they are effectively in the, October, early November period of Black Friday shopping where you don't want to touch the site no matter what at this point, A, and then B, you're dealing with state purchasing processes. So yeah, they're at this point, they're all probably would love to clamor onto, you know, Amazon Cloud or Google Cloud or Oracle Cloud, whatever. But, you know, again, A, they're on lockdown for the infrastructure, but B, they probably have to go through a multi-month, you know, procurement process that would get them there.
Yep. It'd be interesting to see after we come out of COVID, how some of these sites do end up changing. So over time, if we can keep track of their connectivity architecture, maybe they will move to the cloud. Maybe they will have CDNs.
It'd be interesting also to understand the backends on these as well. So, I mean, in this case, it looked like the traffic may not have even been getting to the backend because of the congestion on the front end. But, you know, New Jersey had put out that call for COBOL programmers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm guessing they're not the only one. They're just the first one to have raised their hand. You know, and I'm kicking myself for taking Pascal in 10th grade instead of COBOL. Could have had a side gig here.
Yeah, that's really interesting because it seems like, and we've seen this issue with other sites that have seen a pretty significant surge as well, which is that whether it's a legacy network or hosting or application architecture, that's where we're seeing a lot of a lot more pain. You know, mm-hmm. In some instances, we've seen providers who are getting an increase in traffic, and maybe they're handling the traffic okay, but their response time, application response time, is really slow. And they may, and these are often companies that have been in business a lot longer and probably have more technical debt. And so, really, this is kind of just points to the real impact of your architectural choices, whether they be network or application related, and cloud providers like other services like CDN providers, kind of the real winners here, mm-hmm. And so it'd be interesting to see if this perhaps triggers, as you mentioned, Archana, kind of some, not to use a very, a marketing-y term, but digital transformation. I said it. That they start to rethink, their posture, if you will, and realizing just how little agility they have to respond to changes in need. So, if there's any good outcome from this, that would certainly be one of them.
Right. And it's definitely not that the internet is congested, right?
Yeah.
And this just reiterates the fact that the internet's actually able to handle it. We didn't see any issues getting within that data center where the application's hosted, but it was congestion in, like, you know, smaller parts of where the application's hosted.
These have all been very much site or application specific, whether the issue's been related to the network or to the application itself. And that's somewhat good news, because that means that where we are seeing issues, they're relatively contained versus like something widespread or systemic. So that's good. And I know that you've been tracking some interesting things that happened last week, David.
Yeah, I mean, and it's just to the point you just made, that was when I had published a blog post about internet resilience for the Internet Society at the end of February, before all this really hit. And, you know, there was some discussion of, you know, will the internet be able to handle all this? And one of the points I had made in the post was that, you know, yes, we expect the internet to be able to handle all this, which I think you guys are showing, but that where we expected to see the problems was most likely going to be on the application side. And I think that's you know, bearing out like what you just said. You know, what I'm doing, well, so a few things. You know, one is, as we talked about earlier, I've been looking at a lot of the articles and blog posts from the various providers, and looking at data from like IXPs and the network providers, trying to understand, you know, what changes have they seen as a result of all the shift from working from home. Have they been able to handle it? You know, and by and large, the answer has been yes. You know, again, as you've pointed out, there have been some hiccups more on the platform sides, and a little bit, I think, also as we expected, on some of the first mile connections. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we're all privileged enough to have, you know, high speed internet access, which is great, and it's probably less likely to become congested. But when you have a more restricted, you know, home internet connection, or you're reliant on mobile tethering, it's going to be hard to do the streaming plus the video conferencing plus, you know, whatever else you need to do. So compiling a lot of that data together to do a set of follow-up blog posts about internet resilience. And then I've also been looking at, as part of the Internet Disruption Report, you know, I look at things at a more aggregate level, generally more of a country level. So, you know, been working on putting together the March report. And I think a couple of the major things that stood out there. One was 7 separate power outages in Venezuela that impacted connectivity there. You know, they, as I've found writing the report over the last year and doing similar work prior to that, you know, there are a handful of common root causes. And Venezuela's power infrastructure just seems to be particularly problematic. And you know, in past months, there's been 1 or 2 power outages that have been significant enough to impact connectivity. In March, though, there were 7. So we'll be looking at that, you know, what parts of the country did it impact. And then submarine cables and problems with those cables have also been a common factor. So 2 that stood out in March were the SAT-3 cable, which problems there impacted connectivity in Angola and Gabon. And then there was apparently what was called a dragon storm in Egypt. I guess this was a pretty significant storm that created problems with the EC cable, EASSY, I'm assuming I'm pronouncing it correctly, which had measured impact on, I think, up to 10 countries. So some generally more significant than the other. And then month to date in April, so over the last 2 weeks, the ACE cable, Africa coast to Europe, had some problems earlier in the month, and that's caused connectivity problems in Mauritania and Liberia. And then the CMIWI 4 cable, or SMW4, which has historically had a lot of problems as well, had more issues and impacted connectivity to about 5 or 6 other countries. So, you know, we talk, I think we here you've gone into a lot more detail looking at more specific issues. In what I've been tracking, they've been more aggregate, more higher level. And I think harder to, what's the word? Not authenticate.
to sort of know what the actual user,
well, not so much the user impact, but the you know, the attribution, that's the word I'm looking for.
Right.
We can see through measurement that, oh, okay, there are issues in a particular set of countries, and you have to start looking for the commonalities and say, oh, these are all connected to this given cable. You know, sometimes an affected provider will say something, and they'll post something that says, oh, our upstream provider is having problems, or, you know, there's been a cut on the SMW4 cable or the 8th cable that's created problems for our subscribers. You know, we sincerely apologize and so on. But in many cases, the consortiums that own the cables don't say anything.
Yeah.
In many cases, the providers don't say anything. Mm. So it becomes really challenging to definitively attribute the problems that we see.
Yeah, and there's
The Venezuela outages that you were talking about in March, the substantially high number, do you see that related to the situation we are in, or, you know, are they just independent occurrences?
They're independent occurrences. I think that, I mean, Venezuela has had historically problematic power infrastructure. I think just in March happened to have enough power edges that had power edges that had a sufficient impact on internet connectivity. You know, if you look through the Twitter feed for I can't remember the name of the power company there, but they have a pretty active Twitter feed, and I mean, pretty much like every day they're something, you know, we have dispatching crews here, dispatching crews there to fix this issue, to fix that issue. So I think, you know, it's they're in a constant state of repair. I think Not all of the power problems there, though, have a widespread impact on internet connectivity. You know, and one of the interesting things too is that we see oftentimes power outages are hard to detect through internet monitoring because, you know, in many cases the points, the endpoints that are being measured are within data centers. And generally the data centers will have backup power, they'll have better power. So it's when you start seeing, you know, traffic loss from subscriber connections, and when you start seeing measurements to endpoints within the subscriber ISPs failing, that's generally when it starts to show up in these types of reports.
Got it. Okay.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, you've been doing this for a while in terms of compiling a lot of these incidents and kind of collecting them and documenting them, which I think over time is really helpful because it helps people to understand what baseline is, you know, that there are, you know, a variety of different issues that can happen. And, you know, to your point, you know, in the case of Venezuela, this is, you know, fairly common and not necessarily attributable to any political climate or anything like that. And the internet is so vast that having different angles on what's going on, whether it be sort of at the kind of the infrastructure level or even just kind of like the cable level, the pipes, and understanding that, or even the vantage that, for example, maybe the CDN providers or the cloud providers have, because every one of them has a slightly different view or picture of what's going on, and the same with all the IXPs. And no one of these entities can see the whole picture. It's really just through some compositing of you know, if that's a word, of you know, all of these data sets. Do you start to kind of, does it start to emerge of like what the overall kind of, you know, state of the internet is, if you will?
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's absolutely true. And that's, so one of the other projects I'm working on at the Internet Society is around, they've put out, put forth 8 project areas that they're focusing on for 2020. So I'm involved with the Measuring the Internet project, surprise, and focusing specifically on a use case around internet shutdowns. So that is one of the things we're trying to do, is work with partners to aggregate these different vantage points to really help understand, okay, you know, this set of measurements saw a problem in a given country at a given time, but this set didn't. So, you know, was it really a shutdown or was it something else? You know, and in looking at some of these events and some of these disruption events, they're definitely more evident in certain types of measurements than others.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, maybe, you know, I think it'd be helpful to give us an overview of kind of what the mandate is of the Internet Society, because you mentioned like this work around disruption. Is it because they want to track issues around internet sovereignty or you know, like censorship, or is there a broader agenda, and what is sort of the mandate of the Internet Society overall?
Sure. So I mean, our aim is to, you know, is the internet is for everyone. So making sure that, not, I shouldn't say making sure, but, you know, helping to drive towards making sure that everybody has internet connectivity and usable internet connectivity, and making sure that the internet remains open, globally connected, secure, and trustworthy. You know, and those are, I think, four key areas that we focus the project areas on, that we focus the advocacy work and the policy work. You know, we do a lot of work around IXP deployment. We do a lot of work around community network deployment. So those unserved and underserved areas, trying to bring them onto the internet, doing a lot of work around encryption, time security, the project I'm involved with, measuring the internet. So we've broken it out into four use cases. But really, ultimately, you know, trying to ensure that the internet is available and is usable for as many people as possible.
Yeah, that's great. Well, then I guess, you know, maybe the last thing we can cover here is your thoughts on how the recent events could potentially impact rulings around net neutrality going forward, given that the internet has kind of been seen as very essential to everyone recently. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that. If there's thinking that, you know, because I think in the last ruling they basically said it's not really a utility. You know, it's but you know, can the case be made now that, you know, it is actually quite essential?
So I think the case can absolutely be made that it's essential. I'm going to actually sidestep the question of net neutrality, because that is a rat hole that I don't want to go
there. Fair.
But having said that, I think that the current events hopefully will do more to get the policymakers around the world to help close the digital divide. So, you know, again, there are a lot of places, even in the US, where high-speed broadband is either not affordable or not available.
Yep.
You know, you have kids sitting in cars outside of school buildings or libraries trying to, you know, snag the Wi-Fi signal to get their homework done. You know, internationally, you know, there are in many countries, the internet infrastructure, especially the last mile infrastructure, is just insufficient.
Yeah.
You know, and hopefully there can be a lot more investment made in really bringing that up to a usable level, and to creating environments that are sufficiently competitive, where, you know, the cost of getting online is much more reasonable.
Well, I think that's a great place to end the show today. So Archana, why don't you take us out?
Yeah, sure. David, thank you so much for being on the show. Great hearing from you and, you know, your perspective of how the internet is doing. And again, Angelique, it'll be very interesting to see next week how the ISPs do and how the UCaaS providers do as well.
Absolutely.
Hopefully we'll have another outage and we can talk about it again. So, so no, every week there seems to be an interesting outage that you're covering.
Top security.
but I think the key is these outages, you know, happen with or without COVID,
absolutely,
right? Like, you know, that's the key to remember. We've seen these outages before COVID, we are seeing them during, and we will continue to see them after the situation's passed. So with that, if you're interested in hearing more about, you know, how we understand outages, how we dissect that, feel free to just subscribe to our blog, blog.1000eyes.com, or follow us on Twitter. Until then, have a safe week, and we'll see you next week, guys.